dbkmediaservices.com.
You are listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SBC Sports Talk Podcast. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Sports. And now, here are your hosts, Shane Combs, John Bruce, and Bruce Knox.
Hello, everybody, and welcome into the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. I am, in fact, Bruce Knox, one of the three hosts who will be leading you through this week in SVC Sports. And as always, I want to say that we are brought to you by Triple Crown Family Fun Center. Just a great place to get together, have a party, and do whatever you kind of want to do out there. They've got everything that we've talked about over these long, long seasons of podcast. Cardo's Pizza, they've got places for you to have parties and events. They've got, of course, the arcades, the super inflatable land. I mentioned in the past couple episodes the new limousines that they have. Don't want to forget about soccer. It's such a big thing out there, but you need to get in on the beginning of some of those soccer leagues, I understand. And then, of course, there's Bullseye Sports Bar. Triple Crown, located at 1 Nancy Wilson Way in Chillicothe, right off of Bridge Street, just behind the Hampton Inn. Give them a call at 740-773-7529. And for all kinds of detailed information, if you don't want to call, you can get on their website at www.triplecrownfamilyfuncenter.com. We appreciate their sponsorship of this and 225 other podcasts that we've put together over these, starting our eighth year now. Anyway, I'd like to introduce two guys who really know what's going on in SVC Sports. First, John Bruce. John, are you back with us again this week?
Yes, I am back in Ohio.
Good, good. Again. Those of you that follow him on Twitter may understand that he's been going around seeing some of the sites in Major League Baseball, and we're glad to have him back from, I understand, St. Louis and Chicago for the weekend, and he's yep. He's a little tired, I'm sure, right now. And yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, got in to just under 4,000 miles in the last three weekends. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, he might have to give the buns a rest for the next couple weekends, maybe. Anyway.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the soothsayer of SVC Sports, Mr. Shane Combs. How are you, Shane?
Oh, doing great. Just running right into the studio out of SVC Volleyball tonight. Had a chance to see Piketon and Paint Valley. Lady Red Streaks win in four. So good to see those young ladies play. It was a competitive match, and now ready to talk SVC volleyball and a whole lot more this week.
Well, okay, we'll get right to it here. You know, last week we started talking about the weather. You always talk about the weather in Ohio, it seems like, one extreme to the other. This week, Shane, we had one fan comparing the SVC Volleyball League to Ohio weather. Can you kind of explain that to us?
Well, it's a pretty good analogy, really. Yeah. It's kind of that ever-changing. You know, what is it they say? If you don't like Ohio weather, just wait a few minutes and it'll change. And gosh, I guess you get that a little bit with SVC volleyball. Seems like just yesterday, we, and rightfully so, we're giving a lot of attention to Huntington.
Right.
They were starting to get some love there on KKJ, and Derek Webb had done a nice piece for us, and we highlighted him on the show. I know a lot of different things. And then you turn around and it kind of goes the other way on them, but it's just the up and down team. I think they beat Uniota. The first night I watched Huntington play, I remember against the Dean, I said to myself after the first set, I'm like, wow, they look really good. I'm not so sure these guys couldn't play with Southeastern Uniota. And then by the third set of that match, I'm thinking, I'm not sure there's a team in the league that couldn't beat them a set. You know, I mean, it's one of those things of just that up and down. And you know, it's just that's kind of the way it goes. We have a competitive league, and John touched on it earlier in the year where if you can't take a night off, Westfall's really been off to a slow start this year for whatever reason, and they really got it going the other night. We said in the preview show a couple weeks back that Phillips was a game changer at the net, and her going, I think it was 26 kills. I don't have that in front of me, but obviously she got things going. And then, you know, I see was like Zane Trace now, Rand taking over that offense a little bit more. It organizes them a little bit. When they serve receive, they're pretty good. I know Adina is going through some rebuild and some tough times with their non-league schedule as brutal as always. Mm-hmm. It's kind of weird to see them down like this. But again, I think into the second half of the year, you're going to see them improve. But Uniota's rebounded well. And then here's the consistency of Southeastern. So I don't know. In a way, John, I we're right back to where we started going into the mm-hmm. Tuesday night, which we'll talk about here in a little bit. But doesn't it feel like we're back to the two at the top? 3 through 8 is a toss-up, depending on what night you ask me. Huntington's probably the most talented of that bunch, but it's obviously been proven that you're going to get a lot of competitive matches. Is the inconsistency, in your opinion, just older kids, you know, as juniors and seniors, taking on far more responsibility and new roles and maybe adjusting than they had as freshmen, sophomores, and then the younger kids coming in, adjusting to the varsity grind of, if you go through an emotional match Tuesday night, you got to refocus on Thursday night. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe you could say that with Adina from Tuesday night, taking Uniota 4, and then really quite frankly, I got to give Zane Trace credit. They just kind of dominated Adina Thursday night. Do you think that's just the inconsistency factor, or is there something else we need to talk about there?
I think you can see it in a lot of other sports too. It is the new roles.
Yeah.
Obviously, you have the new kids playing varsity roles for the first time, sometimes stepping up in competition. But you could have a school that has, we'll say, 4 of their main 6 rotation players back, but they might be asked to do some different things. So it's a little more difficult for them to find consistency early on. And I think that about this time, you know, halfway through, we're going to find these teams are going to find their consistency that they'll have for the rest of the year.
Yeah.
You know, you guys, Shane, everybody's talking about Southeastern and Uniota this week to end the first round of play. Can you kind of give the fans an overview of what this match means to the league now and preview the matchup for the fans?
Well, with this podcast coming out so late Monday night, you know, unless it's late Monday, early Tuesday, I hate it for some of the fans because the match will have already taken place. Maybe for some of you that your routine has you listening Wednesday or Thursday. But I guess we talk about the names on those two teams so much. I think most people that are volleyball fans are pretty familiar with the names involved. So I want to talk to him a little bit more about the actual matchup and kind of analyze the match itself. You can look over the stats and see different things. But the one thing for me, guys, that I think that fans really want to pay attention to here is serving. You know, when I think of these two teams, Uniota kind of strikes me as a team that they're going to serve pretty safe. They're going to put the ball in play. You won't see them miss a lot of serves. As a result, you won't see them with a ton of aces. They're a team that when you look through the stats, Eldridge and Cottrell and Pinkerton and Coleman, they're all up there in the top 5 or so in terms of serve percentage. And I guess that philosophy makes a little bit of sense if you think about it. You know, we're not going to mess up. We're going to serve it in play. And once the ball's in play, we pass it better than you. We feel like we're going to set and hit it better than you. We're going to block it better than you, and they're just going to play you. And that's fine. But I think on the other side, and I think this is really something to watch in the match, I think the serving of Southeastern becomes really, really important. You'll see Southeastern miss a few more serves than Uniota, but you'll also see that risk-reward show up. And when Southeastern really starts to hit their spots, They bring about 3 or 4 different kids at you. When you start looking through the ace category, you'll start to see Heiss and Goble, Lockwood and Longheed. I know even the other night in the Huntington match, Wheeler had some nice drop on a serve. So Coach Hutton and Coach Tenado there, I know they do such a good job of teaching the spot serve. They bring about 4 or 5 different serves. And I just think the reason that's so important, guys, is what better way to offset the Uniota size at the net sometimes than to try to get them out of system? If you can hit your spots with some tough serves, it's not always about getting the ace, but if you can hit your spots and stay away from Pinkerton and kind of force them out of system, what you do is you bring Coleman and Eldridge off the net, off that 10-foot line, and you maybe get them chasing a little bit, and it doesn't allow a McGlone or a Fisher or a Pierce or a Cottrell to get the swing that they would normally want to get. So I think – that's a big factor I would look at. I think I would also look at Goble's experience, her vision, her distribution. She really is going to have to be on her A game. It's a situation where Uniota's size is so incredible up and down the net. Mm-hmm. If Lexi Lockwood and Holly Walsh can pass it on target, it allows Goble to take a look and with that vision try to manipulate the blockers a little bit and try to get Heiss and Boldy and DeLong and company there some open nets. And then the last thing I would say, and this is just me, people who listen to the show know over the years, just as the coach in me kind of analyzes these groups, Southeastern's a little bit more of a team that's been there, done that, trying to now get over the hump in the league and get this done, where Uniota's got a lot of new faces in the rotation, and they're talented, but you play about 10 different kids, not as many kids play all the way around, and one of the biggest places they miss Matty Eberts when I watch him is when you're playing 10 different kids, when things start to go bad, the way volleyball is such an up-and-down momentum sport, mm-hmm. who's kind of in charge of that huddle, so to speak? You know what I mean? Coach Stallion, when he gets two timeouts a set, who's able to bring them together? Because I think sometimes, John, what happens is it's really difficult. You know, in football, the quarterback huddles the mm-hmm. troops up every play. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, the catcher and the coach is able to communicate with pitchers and defense every pitch and different things. It's very difficult. The game of volleyball is right now, boom, boom, boom. And, you know, you can get outscored 5-6-1 before you even know it happens. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that's really, really important, is the Uniota kind of sticks together and make sure that they don't allow those types of laws just the overall transition of the match. I'm real excited, guys. I think it's going to be a great match. I know Uniota dropping the one to Huntington. I think it's safe to call it a must win. I don't think the league can allow Southeastern to go up two with a round to play. So I know not only Uniota needs it, but I know everyone in the league that's trying to get back in this thing needs Uniota. So Southeastern, this is what they've worked for all offseason. They certainly have a chance to take a stranglehold of this league come Tuesday night.
All right. Are you going to be able to attend that one, Shane?
Absolutely, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I didn't figure you'd miss that one. All right, volleyball fans, we will have more discussion for you later in the show, but up next in the fan feedback, we turn our attention to the record book as one SVC athlete surpassed everyone in the history of her sport. And in this podcast, our fan feedback is going to be sponsored by North Fork Animal Clinic and Dr. Blake Lloyd and his staff out there at 2260 Anderson Station Road in Chillicothe. Give them a call at 773. I just about lost it there. 773-7387. That number again before I rudely interrupted myself. 773-7387. And they are open Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., Saturday, 9 a.m. to 12. And then, of course, their pet resort is open from 7 to 7 Monday through Friday, and on Saturday and Sunday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Give them a call for all your veterinary needs. And in our fan feedback, you know, on last week's show, we heard John talk a lot about Uniota's Jayla Campbell. Well, this week she becomes the all-time goal scorer in Ross County history, Shane.
That's something, isn't it? You look back through the soccer page there, John. Jayla with her 94th and a key SVC win over Westfall. That avenges last year's loss. Then 95, the 95th goal comes in a win over Jackson, and then 96 and 97 to break in a win against Zane Trace. And, you know, we've heard it covered a lot of different ways. I've enjoyed the coverage of KKJ. I know Derek had written a nice piece. I know John had awesome video. So 3-4 different people really covering it well throughout the area. What we wanted to do this week, John, before we got your take, was I was kind of looking for a little different perspective, and I got to thinking around, you know, we've been wanting to highlight a little bit of the defensive effort of, you know, a lot of times in basketball, we call it the defensive stopper, and I know out at Zane Trace soccer, Matt Massey is a kid that kind of draws the best player, the best goal scorer on the other team. And, you know, obviously that would be Jayla Campbell, Uniota. I know tonight in a 1-1 game, she's out there chasing Sierra Mitten around. That was a 1-1 tie, Zane Trey Southeastern. You know, so it's a it's an opportunity to talk to Maddie a little bit and talk a little bit of her love for soccer, get a little on-field take from an opponent on Jayla and what makes her so great, and then talk a little bit about the Zane Trace team. So, Bruce, if you're okay with it, let's go ahead and run that interview with – this is Zane Trace's Maddie Massey Friday night at halftime of the football game.
Well, Maddie, the first thing I wanted to ask you was, you know, someone as athletic as you, when I watch you play growing up, I'm sure you were involved in a lot of different sports. Just talk to the people about some of the sports you're involved in, and then what kind of turned you more to soccer as you got older.
So as I was growing up, all I really did was play soccer until I got into junior high, and then I got really invested into track. And that shaped me into the player that I am today because I learned how to sprint, which I wasn't very good at before that. But I just had way too much anxiety with track, so I couldn't continue on. But soccer, I like the competitiveness and being a team sport and having to work together. And, yeah, that's what I like about soccer the most.
Well, and you talk about soccer, it's not just a fall sport. We think of it as a fall sport as someone who covers a website covering high school sports, but it's really become a year-round thing. Talk to people about how much soccer you play, not just for Zane Trace in the fall, but really year-round.
Yeah, I do play year-round. I play for a club out of Waverly called Southern Ohio Crew. And with that, we play indoor soccer at Triple Crown, and we also play futsal at the Waverly YMCA. So it's really an all-year-round sport for me.
You know, when I cover sports, and I do the best I can on, because I'm a coach myself, so I understand the value of every role on a team. And we honestly do our best. I know we're guilty of maybe putting the kid who gets all the rushing yards in football or the passing yards or the kids who score the goals in soccer, the kids who score the points in basketball. You play one of those roles for people that maybe don't follow soccer that's kind of like the offensive lineman or kind of like the kid who sets the screens or the kid who's playing defense or rebound. You're a defensive player in soccer. One, explain basically what your role is throughout a match, and then also is it kind of hard sometimes to go through those types of things and maybe not get the credit for how hard you and your teammates are working defensively?
Yeah, it's incredibly hard. I just know that I'm playing for my team, and it's like it's hard because you don't have statistics for, you know, defenders. They're really overlooked because like the offenders get all the glory about how many goals and assists they have. But yeah, it is hard at times because you want to be up and you want to be scoring, but you know your team needs you back because defense is just as important as offense in every single sport.
Especially soccer, where there's not against the good teams, there's not a lot of points scored. Period.
Yeah.
One of the things that I'm looking at here in an upcoming article is we just had quite a soccer milestone with Campbell there at Uniota breaking the record on her way to 100 goals in a career. That's unbelievable. I know, and watching you play, you're usually assigned to the other team's best scorer, and you know you've done a really good job. But like a lot of great scorers, sometimes they just get theirs or whatever. What can you tell? Yeah, you know, I've had coaches talk to me about it. What? Give me a player's perspective of what makes Jayla so good. What makes her such a great scorer?
Jayla just has unbeatable speed. Her first two steps, she is already at full pace. So if you're not like staying back on her to where you can get a jump, you're not going to mess with her. And you just have to break her down and keep her in front of you, because if you stab, she is gone into the goal.
Well, and, you know, the other night, our soccer analyst, John Bruce, does an awesome job. He covers kids really well in the league. And as he was updating, I was really following that matchup with you the other night closely, and I thought you guys did a really good job on her. But I think the other thing about great scores is they just get loose for a couple seconds. I know she scored on a direct kick one time. The other one, I think the ball just kind of got loose, and she was there to make a play. That's got to be frustrating too, because I thought you guys did a pretty good job on her the other night, and she still got two.
Yeah, it was frustrating, but it happens. And like the first goal that she scored was a fluke. It was like 12 people within 2 feet of each other, and everybody was just kicking it, and it was crazy. And then the second goal was off a handball right outside the box. So she didn't really mean to get a handball. Sometimes it just comes up and hits you, and you can't do anything about it.
Well, last thing, while I have you, let's take the advantage of giving the Zane Trace soccer a shout out. Tell us about your team, how you guys doing this year, and what's your outlook going into tournaments?
We are very hopeful for tournaments because, well, we play Wheelersburg on Saturday, and they're in our like division, so we're really hopeful to get a W against them. But our team has grown so much. Like, over the past 4 years, I have loved watching our team grow and shape into what we are today. Like, we weren't like this 4 years ago. Like, we have grown so much. Like, together as a team, we know, like, how to pass well and work well with each other, which is great.
Well, I appreciate it. Best of luck to you. Look forward to following.
Thank you.
Again, that's Zane Trey Sr., Maddie Massey, and I tell you, I really, really enjoyed super young lady, well-spoken. I had a chance, John, to talk to her a little bit, you know, off the air, too, and just a super young lady. And I wanted to get your take on a couple things when you hear that as a soccer person that has a little bit better feel for the game of soccer. She's talked about, you know, Jayla's first couple steps, I thought was a really intelligent way to analyze that. Mm-hmm. And then the next thing, kind of talk to us a little bit about the Zane Trey soccer team. I know Savannah Addie, some of those kids that can score and get involved. Just kind of your response to overall defense, Jayla, and the soccer team, or any other thing that jumped out at you about the interview.
Well, she was exactly right about Jayla. Jayla's got, you know, a great first step. She's one of the things we talked about the other day at that at the football game, me and you did, was about how scores can be relentless. So yeah, when they're, she was breaking down that kind of, I'll just say a scrum for a better, better term. I mean, but as soon as I saw the ball go in the net, I was like, I went, oh, that was Jayla, because you could just tell she was just relentlessly trying to get it. And there's only so much you can do on a situation like that, especially when there's so many people in. I want to see Zane Trace had a couple of times where they went to kick it out, to clear it out, and it just went off of a body and stayed in.
Yeah.
And it was just one of those just kind of crazy things. And yeah, she's a relentless goal scorer, but Maddie did just an outstanding job on her the other night, because I want to say she only got maybe one or two shots on goal from within like the pace of play, because the first goal was off a corner kick and the second goal was off a free kick.
Yeah.
So it's really well done. About the Zane Trace team, that the Addy sisters are outstanding. I believe Zane Trace has either five or six seniors that are playing more or less defense, defensive midfield defense. And that's part, really, that is part of maturing as a soccer player, is knowing, you know, how she mentioned, you don't have stats. There's no stats for defense. And sometimes it's hard to identify strong defenders, especially if you're just looking at the game. If you're not watching the game, you just kind of see, oh, they gave up two goals tonight. Well, they might have been pressured the whole game. So you have to have people that are unselfish and will buy into that. And it, I mean, Zay Trace has done that. They have, you know, a lot of seniors. They have the Addies that are just outstanding athletes that are going to give them a chance to score. But because they have these seniors that have played together for 4 years and are friends and great teammates, it will give them a chance in the Division III tournament because of, you know, just playing great defense.
Sure.
And I look for, I'm going to watch them against Westfall this week, and I look forward to seeing them, and that should be another really good game.
Well, I always enjoy that, and I know Bruce will throw out some contact information later, but I want to say congratulations again to Jayla. What an amazing accomplishment. Look forward to covering her 100th here coming up soon. And then in the great Seal Sports that I've been having the privilege of writing for, looking to feature her in an upcoming month here soon as well. So, again, congratulations to her. And thank you again to Maddie for joining us on SVC Sports Talk. I thought that was really good. But, John, to give a little bit more love to soccer, before we leave soccer, I don't know how in the world I can do so without asking you about Sierra Mitten. I mean, the other night, the night after Jayla kind of steals the headlines, all of a sudden I pick up my phone thinking it was going to be a slow night. I think it was Wednesday. And Southeastern beat Leesburg 10-8, and Sierra Mitten with 7 goals and 3 assists. You've been around soccer a lot more than I have. I'll guess that that's as good as anything you've seen, especially in what was a pretty competitive match. It sounded like they needed all 7 goals and 3 assists to win.
Yeah, I've seen games where people just kind of just go off offensively, and it's usually when the teams are not competitive at all.
Right.
But that's, I mean, 10-8, that is an extremely competitive game. Obviously, a little different on the defensive side. But at the same time, I would think after she probably gets 3 goals, they're probably going to swarm around her. And then she gets 4 more and assists the other 3. Like, it's unbelievable that you can do that in a competitive game. I saw her against Unia earlier this year. You can tell she's a standout player. Just real accomplishment, because I'm sure there have been more goals scored in a game. Usually those are just blowouts or somebody just trying to get a record. But it doesn't normally happen in a close competitive game like that. And it just shows important she was to her team on that night.
Well, and Bruce, to cap it all off, I know Zane Trey Southeastern, as we're recording here on Monday, they played to a 1-1 tie tonight. I'm sure Maddie was chasing Sierra around, like she discussed in her role there. Sierra did get 1 goal tonight for Southeastern, and then Hannah Addy, who John just talked about there, scores the Zane Trace goal. So very competitive SVC soccer match there on the girls' side tonight, 1-1.
Some good stuff there in the soccer. Up next, guys, we're going to talk SVC football as 4 entered the week perfect, but only 1 still remains. And this week's football discussion going to be brought to us by the folks at Crown Hill Golf Club. Crown Hill, located up at 9500 U.S. Route 22 West in Williamsport. Give them a call, 740-986-4653. Tell them the boys from SVC Sports Zone sent you, and they will fix you right up. Actually, they will work with anybody, but they like our listeners too, I'm sure. So give them a call, 740-986-4653. And Shane, you wanted to talk a little bit about the Westfall girls basketball event coming up?
Yeah, let's give Coach Blue and her Lady Mustangs another shout-out. Saturday, September 22nd, Crown Hill Golf Course. They're going to have their golf scramble there. And as I said last week, I know these fundraisers are so crucial to the success of programs and the things they need to get in terms of resources to be successful. It's $50 per golfer, $200 per team. It's very reasonable. Again, 4-man scramble. We know they have incredible facility up there at Crown Hill and their dinner facility, their banquet facility. It's off the charts as well. So give Coach Blue, Jennifer Blue, a call, 614 area code, 774-8577. And again, that's Jennifer Blue, 614-774-8577. And get out there and support the Lady Mustangs if possible.
All right. We appreciate that. Again, Crown Hill Golf Club. Guys, I guess it went so well last week. I think we're going to try the same kind of format as we talk about football this week. If you recall, listeners, we had 4 downs or 4 different headlines we were looking for from each of the 2 guys here. So we start off with our first down and go all the way to fourth down, and we're going to do that again, and we're going to go back and forth as we did last week. But I think last week, if I'm not mistaken, I started with John. So, Shane, I'm going to go to you for your first down headline for SVC football.
Fair enough. Guys, let's start with elite QBs as advertised in shootouts. Last week we talked about Southeastern and Huntington that we thought, you know, Southeastern probably a little bit of the favorite, but we thought Huntington, led by Elijah McCloskey, would be competitive. We were saying if you were a betting person, John, to take the over, you know, 'cause we figured there would be some points scored, and man, they certainly didn't disappoint. The 2 of them each had a hand in 5 touchdowns, so 10 total touchdowns. Certainly give Nusser credit at 131 and a score on the ground. I know McCloskey throwing 4 touchdowns. I know Knowles and Beeler and Halbau and so forth. But, really impressive numbers across the board there. Probably doesn't surprise people that Southeastern gets out in front there. But Huntington, very competitive, fighting back. And at 46-30, John, I know you and I were at another game, but as we were hearing those come in, you know, just a competitive performance, 14-12 halftime, and then Southeastern jumps out in front, but Huntington again, not going away, coming back and continuing the fight. But I don't know, just a really exciting game. I'm sure. I know it was exciting to follow.
I would guess that anytime. I hope people watch it in basketball season two. Anytime you can get Lane Ruby and Elijah McCloskey going against each other, it's going to be must see. In whatever, I would say it would be the same in checkers. those two, they're just great athletes. And, you know, they are as elite of athletes as we have in our league right now. And I wasn't surprised at all by the fact that there's a lot of scoring. I was kind of pleasantly surprised to hear Huntington able to put up those points, because I wasn't 100% sure because of, you know, who they had played. But I'm not overly surprised with the types of kids Huntington usually puts out. Those kids are going to grind. They're going to put out the effort. They're never going to back down. And then you have, you know, a really good coaching staff in place now.
Sure.
It's going to be more fun to watch than not for Huntington, I think, as long as Coach Keller and his group are out there also.
All right, John, you want to give us your first down now? Headline?
Yeah. My first down goes to the game that me and Shane went to. Is Zane Trace puts all their weapons on display in the shutout. Three picks, five interceptions. Mason Lawrence with two of the picks. Karen Place with five sacks. Big and athletic on D. They are just – you could just tell that early on Westfall is going to have some issues throwing, because Westfall – or Zane Trace's defensive line was just tall. I mean, they're big and good and athletic, but, man, they're tall too. So that was going to give smaller quarterback with Zach Gibson a little bit of issues. Elliot Lynn with just a unreal game. I mean, he only had two catches, but one goes for – felt like 50 yards that set up a touchdown, and then another one goes 75 yards that set up their field goal. Just a great game. And then he had the interception to end the game to seal the shutout for him. Just looking down at the field, Westfall's Clay Steele, he's 6'4", 6'5", just big, good-looking athlete, and he wasn't bigger than the cornerbacks that were on him. So the fact that, you know, Lynn is 6'3", 6'4", good-looking athlete. Nick Nesser, 6'5", 6'6", wide receiver. I mean, that is a big team. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you have matchup nightmares with those guys on the outside. And then you have Cooper Stauffer and, you know, Etheridge Games getting back into things. It's just that team really impressed me. And then, of course, you have – one of the top weapons in the league of Christian Fetters, who drilled a field goal, hits both of his extra points, and kicked a touchback. I was just really impressed with Zane Trace.
All right.
Bruce, I agree with everything you just said. I was so disappointed in John there, because we had a chance to meet some very nice people there at the end. And
I said it wrong?
It's Stauffer. Didn't he say Stauffer?
I didn't catch it.
We have struggled for years and years and years on SVC Sports Talk, Stauffer, whatever. We meet some very nice people the other night. We get the scouting report, and John reverts back to his habits. So,
yes. I apologize.
We'll take his weekly raise down a little bit.
Here's the beauty of it, not to take anything away from Carson, okay, because he was a great player. But here's the thing, is if a kid is going with the name Cougar, we might just be able to go first name only here if he's going to keep scoring touchdowns a week. We just go Cougar.
I think I'm going to have to do that just so I don't say
you
the
don't
last
have
name
to mess off. Up the last name, right?
Yeah.
The funny thing was that we actually did discuss that last week before we started recording. Yes. So, all right. Well, we'll get it better, and we'll just refer to him as Cougar from now on. Okay, I've lost my place, guys, but I think we're headed to second down, and I'm going to go back to John for this, the first second down headline.
I just went with Unio lets the Wildcat out of the cage. The Unio offense struggled in the first half against Edina, had a couple turnovers, just couldn't really get things going, and they went to just running the Wildcat with Jamarcus Carroll. Mm-hmm. And he runs and passes them to win, rushes for 200 yards, over 200 yards again. 212. Yep. Three touchdowns, and then throws a touchdown also. Hits Chance Smith, who had a receiving and a rushing touchdown on the day. I know the young quarterback with Aiden Loeffler, they're still going to work him in. He'll get it. It's just, you know, learning on the fly can be a little difficult, especially with the small preseason. So I admired Unita going to just say, hey, our bread and butter is going to be to run behind our line. When you got guys like Dalton Ford, Carter Wisecup, Logan Shanton, Chris Roberts, and Ryan Williams blocking for you, and then you got Nehemiah Feltz, who is about 5'7", 160, and will block anybody in the league and just does it with great technique on the outside. I thought it was really smart. They said, we're going to win this game. I'm interested to see what they do this week to see if they go back to that or if they go back with the more traditional or if they throw it in, mix it in.
Yeah.
All right. Shane, your second down headline.
Well, I think you got to go with defense is the difference. I think when I'm looking out and about it, you know, I watched Zane Trace in person the other night, and then when I see what Paint Valley's doing, you can't help but take notice of what the defenses are doing. Zane Trace pitches the shutout. You know, John mentioned Mason Lawrence had the two picks from the safety position, made a couple of real nice reads. I thought John made a great point about the size of Gibson in the pocket having trouble. Some of his balls sailed high on him, and Mason made some really good reads from the back. I thought in the second half, Westfall made a great coaching adjustment, getting Zach out of the pocket and getting him on the move. But again, Place just lived in the backfield with the five sacks. He mentioned the Lynn interception later, and with Cougar there with the running game. I thought the passing game, you mentioned the big pass plays, you know, Shanton, the Lynn was really, really important. But, you know, listen, Westfall with Gibson and Spellman and Steele and Goldsmith, Hammond, Lawler, those are athletes we know. For whatever reason, it didn't come together. I thought they self-destructed a little bit with some snaps, some penalties. But, man, take nothing away from Zane Trace. To go up to Westfall opening night of league play and pitch the shutout, defense definitely making the difference there. And then Paint Valley, you could say the same thing. I mean, think about what they're doing defensively, John. I mean, you know, L.J. Bird comes in leading the league in tackles. He has a scoop and score. Lane Mettler right there behind him and second in the league in tackles. He had a few sacks the other night, I think 8 total tackles. I know he had a block punt in the updates I had. The Davis kid with an interception. The week before, I know Andrew Walker. I don't have that in front of me. I believe it was Andrew Walker that had the defensive touchdown. They had 4 turnovers in that game. So this is a team that in 4 weeks, I think they've given up late touchdowns. I know Python's touchdown the other night was a JV touchdown, and I apologize to those young men. I think it was Gallian the Lore, but I couldn't verify that, and I hate to just guess on the scoreboard. So those two young men not getting on the scoreboard, I apologize for that, but I never could confirm that. But I guess the point for this particular defense is the difference, John, is the fact that here Paint Valley is 4 weeks in, and I don't know if their varsity defense has given up a touchdown. I'm just going off memory there, but that's and they're not only holding people out of the end zone, it seems like they're making a habit of scoring themselves. So not that Newland and company needs a whole lot of help with the way they're scoring it, but the defense led by Mettler and Bird and Cockrell and Davis and a lot of other kids involved there, just doing a super job. And so I think right now defense is the difference when you look at the top of the standings. It's fun to talk offense, but when you start giving up less than 2 points on average a week, you know, right around 2.3, I think, entering league play, and then the other night that the varsity pitches the shutout, that's going to get it done most time.
That'll work. All right, we head to third down headlines, and I think, Shane, you're first on this one.
All right, guys. Well, on third down, you know, Nick Saban and his football team, they kind of make me want to puke.
brother.
Yeah, but when it comes to country music, John, I don't know if you're a country music lover, but I love me some Alabama. So let's go with You Can't Keep a Good Man Down. You know, last week, am I dating myself there, John? Are you a good Alabama fan?
I, I like cheap seats.
Oh, okay. Absolutely.
Just baseball. Yeah.
Well, I know a couple of I know Song of the South too. There's my Alabama catalog.
Maybe we could even get Bruce to pay great respect to Alabama and some of our bump music in the upcoming shows.
Oh, we can
shows.
Do that. We can do that. We'll do that.
Okay. Well, you can't keep a good man down. I know I highlighted the home run hitters last week, and you know you talked about the Carroll kid at Uniota, and John, I love what you said about the Wildcat formation, because I wondered myself. In fairness to the young quarterback, I think the Leffler kid, I've seen him play a couple times. I think he's got a ton of upside. I don't know how much it is. In fairness to him, I don't know how much it is in terms of making a change as much as I just wondered how much it was a formation. I could be wrong, you know what I mean? But I think a lot of times when Carroll's taking the direct snap, I mean, he's already a factor. Now he's taking the direct snap. It really puts a whole other thing on the defensive checklist that you've got to cover Monday through Thursday. So, you know, obviously the 200-plus yards, the three TDs, you mentioned the touchdown pass. Keep in mind, Sykes and Adina were up 7-6 at halftime in that game. So I just mentioned I guess what I mean by the you can't keep a good man down, I talked about it in previous weeks. If you do not win third down and you do not get off the field and through the course of the night, you start letting Carroll push 18, 20, 22, 24 carries, it's just a matter of time until he's going to break loose. You know, it's kind of like the same could be said for McCloskey and Ruby. We've talked about them. You know, Newland to McFadden and Davis the other night in the passing game. You know, these are all examples of how you compete for a half. Huntington 14-12 at halftime, we mentioned, and then Ruby touches it, what, two times in the third quarter for 100-plus yards, game over. And literally, game over. It was you know, stretched out to three possessions. Same way with Newland. You know, Davis makes the big play in the end zone at the interception the other night. You know, all of a sudden, Newland hits McFadden, hits Davis on the touchdowns. And before you know it, you're piked and you're looking up. You're down 21-28 nothing. It's just game over. So, you know, these home run hitters and these elite players, man, they can strike in a hurry. And, you know, we just talked about it in soccer. It seems like it's the same across the board, a basketball score, a football score, whoever these elite athletes are, John. You feel like, man, I did a pretty good job. Or as a team, you did a pretty good job. And then you look up and there he goes for 60 yards, and it just takes a split second. So, you know, for me, Bruce, it's you can't keep these great players caged up for long. They're just going to break out and make the big play on you.
All right, Mr. Bruce, do you have something for a third down?
I think I'll say as a preview for this week, just the athletes will be out in Frankfurt.
Okay.
With Westfall and Adina, you know, they're both coming off tough losses, but they've had both really good starts of the year. Neither team has a ton of size, but there's a lot of athletes out there. That could be another exciting game. And kind of like you said, Shane, it's, you know, they've got the athletes with, you know, Goldsmith and Steele. Westfall is a good offensive football team, and I'm excited to see what they can do against a team that maybe is similar size with Adina. And Adina, I mean, they've been running the ball down people's throats all year. See how they get it back. And I know they were able to find Fogelsong a little bit this week, at least, maybe not connected, but they were getting good looks at him. And I'm just excited to see how their offense just kind of evolves, as that's a big SVC game. I know we've discussed playoffs and it's still weeks away, but if either one of these teams wants to make a push for it, it's a must win for one of them. Obviously, someone's going to win.
Hard to disagree with that.
Very important game for both teams.
All right, Shane, yours.
Well, I go to fourth down now, right? I go to I got to thinking.
Yep, that's right.
Okay, I got to thinking about Paul Combs the other day, and I was thinking of some funny things he said when he was alive. He, you know, when I'd be in his living room, he'd say some really funny things. And one of the things he used to say would be, "Hold your horses." And it got me thinking as I think about that on the show here, hold your horses. It would be a really bad idea to plan ahead. And guys, I guess where I'm going with this is the coaching cliche of play them one at a time. Really, really needs to be emphasized in this year's league, because what happens is I've had a couple of Uniota people say, well, here we go at Zane Trace at Paint Valley for the league championship in the next 2 weeks. And I'm thinking, whoa, slow down. You know what I mean? It's a long way to go. Same way a couple Paint Valley people peeking ahead, you know, looking past the Huntington game. Thinking, okay, we got Uniota and Zane Trace the week after. And again, I'm wanting to say, whoa, slow down and play these things one at a time. Because we've been talking about it the whole show. When you got athletes like Sykes and Ruby and Gibson and McCloskey and the weapons that they have around them, you know, we have six different wide receivers, John, from six different SVC schools averaging 15 plus a catch. You know, you can if you're play, you're going to look up and be down 7-0, 14-0 in a hurry in this league. So I understand how fans, the mind works, because sometimes I'm guilty of it as a fan. But as the coach in me, I would tell people to slow way down. It's week five. You start peeking ahead. You start peeking ahead, you're going to get yourself beat in this league. So I get it. I know people are excited at Uniota, excited at Zane Trace, excited at Paint Valley, and they are becoming the favorites. But I can promise you that this league has more depth than I can remember the bottom half of this league having in a long, long time. So I would say hold your horses, Bruce, and slow way down and make sure you're playing them one at a time.
Okay, unless you're a Browns fan, and then you can just go right ahead.
Yes.
Okay, but that has nothing to do with the SVC. All right, John.
Well, speaking of the Browns, you know, the Fetters kid at Zane Trace might be able to find him some NFL work this week if he's available to kick some extra points.
Yeah, I think Mr. Gonzalez has already been released, and we're recording this on Monday evening. Anyway, yeah, sorry, John.
He has been.
Yep, fourth down.
The big thing, I think, is get the track shoes out in the battle for the Maple Leaf. I mean, there's going to be just athletes all over the field between Huntington, Paint Valley. I mean, we've been talking about them, but McCloskey, Howbell, Knowles, Beeler, those guys, all very good athletes. Guys can fly. Paint Valley, is it up to 10 guys that have scored so far, Shane? Because,
well, I don't know. You and I were joking the other night. You named all those kids the other night, and then I think we had the first two kids that scored weren't even on your list, right?
Right. Yeah. I think it ended up being 10 now, and that's without even knowing stuff from week one. So three defensive touchdowns the last 3 weeks for the Bay Valley defense. I'm excited to see how Huntington's high-powered offense does against that speed that Paint Valley shows. And is it going to be, I think it will probably be a little bit different than what Paint Valley's seen also defensively, so it'll be a good test for them. I think Paint Valley is the favorite, obviously, but at the same time, I think that could be a really fun high-scoring rivalry game. Also, I just thought of it, it's almost rivalry week in the SVC. I mean, because you got Adina Westfall, Union of Zane Trace, Paint Valley, Huntington.
Yeah, good point. That's about as much of the rivalry as you're going to get. Absolutely.
It's probably going to be some fast, hard-hitting football on Friday night, and I'm not sure that whatever game people choose to go see is going to be a bad idea.
All right. All right, guys, thanks. You did good job on the headlines there for our first, second, third, and fourth downs. Who knows next week what we're going to get into. But let's go ahead and focus on fall sports around the SVC, brought to us and to the fans by North Fork Animal Clinic. Again, that phone number up there, 740-773-7387. That's 773-PETS, if you can't remember the numbers. Give Dr. Blake Lloyd and his staff a call at 2200 2260 Anderson Station Road in Chillicothe. They're open Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5, Saturday 9 to 12, and then their pet resort open Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., Saturday to Sunday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. That's North Fork Animal Clinic, where we care. Give them a call at 773-7387. Well, guys, as we go into the other sports that we've not talked about so far, we've got this fair-unfair that came to us from a fan, and it says the league needs to put a mandatory policy in place. The league needs to put a mandatory policy in place for line judging. They go on to say, we play way too good of volleyball, and our kids deserve better. Shane, why don't we go to you first with your thoughts on this statement, fair or unfair?
Well, before I say, John, I think one of the overused terms in education or in sports in general is this catchphrase of, you got to do what's best for kids. Well, I think we all agree with that. But I think at the same time, what we fight every day in the educational world is, I think you have to do what's best for kids within the resources you have. Mm-hmm. I think what would be best for the kids in the classroom is that we have class sizes at 15 kids or smaller, and that we have the perfect one-to-one technology for kids, and that we have all those different things. But there's this crazy thing out there called money that can sometimes go. So I think the idea here, guys, is fair. Okay, so I'm going to say this is fair, but I obviously understand that it is a financial challenge. So I want to throw that out there in terms of, I think the comment they're making is very fair. I've always been blown away at the sport of volleyball by the line judging situation. It would be kind of like the fact that we are bringing people out of the community and asking them to volunteer their time, and they're trying to do the things. Now, I know Uniota, with a little bit bigger budget, they've kind of gone to the paid line judges. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming – I don't know for sure, but I'm assuming when you go to a Uniota Southeastern, you very well might have that. Or you're at least going to have situations where you have line judges that have been trained a little bit more, high-level volleyball IQ, the ability to do more. But they're even being asked to do more and more. It's no longer about is the ball in or out. It's they're being asked to watch for the tips at the net and the different things. And yeah, it just blows my mind, guys. I mean, it's the equivalent of like out on a Friday night, like this Friday night. John talked about the rivalry week, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'd be like just pulling someone out of the stands at Huntington and saying, "Hey, here's a couple flags. if you see any holds or whatever, just toss your flag out there and let us know." I mean, are you kidding me? I mean, it's you know, you're talking 22 all, 23 all, ball in or out, or it was a ball tipped or not. I mean, you know, you're talking about pivotal things. And yeah, I know I would be terrible at it because I watch the sport way too close from a standpoint of paying attention to some of those things. Like, so I don't know. It's just really tough. I mean, I know we've been doing it this way for a long time, but I think the overall concept, even though it's tough financially, I think it's very, very fair because, you know, John, I don't know in the Zane Trace Uniota baseball game how it would work to pull someone out of Kinnikinick or someone out of, you know, Uniota's crowd there, and just say, "Why don't you call a couple balls and strikes?" Or if you can give us an opinion on, give us an opinion on safe or out on this steal call here, 5-5 tied in the sixth inning. I mean, I just, you know, I mean, that's basically what you're getting in the sport of volleyball. So, you know, people who to make that comment, I think that's a pretty fair comment. I don't know. I mean, that's the way I look at it.
You're saying it's fair, but it's not realistic.
I think it's fair. I think we need to understand that it's a financial strain, but I'm very open. I think we need to be more open-minded in figuring out how to make it financially possible because I do think it is a fair comment.
Okay, I got you. John, any thoughts on that beyond what he's already talked about?
I mean, it's hard for me to argue that at all.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think it's fair. I believe that if we have enough licensed officials in the area, that it would be a good idea, but like Shane said, it comes down to money. Mm-hmm. I mean, if it is not financially plausible to do it, you know, and you're not going to say, hey, you want to come do line judge for this game, you're going to make less money.
Yeah.
Because that would be, I mean, you would think, okay, well, maybe because they're not up top or doing the subs that we can, you know, pay a little less, but license officials aren't going to take less. I mean, it's very fair, but you know, financially it's somewhat plausible, but not very plausible if the schools are trying to make any money and be able to put it into other programs also.
You know, and Bruce, while we're trying to give a shout out to all the fall sports here in this segment, mm-hmm. let me go tennis if you're okay with me jumping
in here.
Sure,
go right ahead.
John, I immediately asked John the other night, how does this work in tennis? Because in a sport like tennis, I'm sure you have a lot of close calls in and out or to the ball. You know, John, I thought was lying to me at first. John, please share with the fans here. Let's go ahead and make this our tennis segment this week. Please share with me, the fans, what you shared with me the other night about the sport of tennis.
Well, in our area, especially, I can't vouch for like Southwest District or Central District, but up until district play, the players call everything themselves. They referee their own games.
Wow. That is unbelievable.
Yeah. So Shane had asked, he said, is there just like a one chair person without the line judges? No, there's nobody. So from what I've watched, there hasn't been anything like really come down to, you know, a close play. But I know I watched a match probably 3 weeks ago and there was a shot and I heard one of the girls say out. It didn't look remotely close to being out, and the other girl just didn't say anything. It was the only time I've seen it where it was, you know, kind of weird. But how do you see that when you're playing?
Yeah,
because I've seen professional tennis players where they just let a ball go because they think it's going to go out, and then they review it. Oh, it didn't go out. So it's so hard to read because it's such a fast-paced game and you're moving all the time. I just don't know how, especially at sectional play, how you can officiate yourself.
Sylvia Gray shy of the state tournament. I'm guessing her matches are just fine. But But I mean, honestly, you get some pretty tight, like sectional level, you're telling me, you get some pretty tight sets there. I mean, that's unbelievable. I mean, am I looking at this, you know, not open-mindedly enough? To me, that just blows my mind, guys. I mean, tell me I'm stupid here, but that's just – That's crazy, isn't it?
I mean, I'll tell you you're stupid, but it's not because of this. I mean, it completely makes sense. You would think we'd have it, but I'll say this. At least during the regular season, you don't pay to get in. There's not someone that runs the set of matches. It's the home coach.
Yeah.
So it's just – I think we're in an area where tennis isn't as prevalent, so it's probably harder to find tennis officials. So they have to kind of just take what they can.
It becomes kind of – I guess it's really cool that they make it work that way. Yeah, the kids just making it happen.
Yeah, it's kind of like in golf how it's, you know, it's gentleman's game. And that's – I mean, it's kind of a proper game with tennis and – I guess you can go up to the Chillicothe Racquet Club and you'll see people playing tennis and they're playing and they know how to they know how to keep the score. But it's like you said, it's really cool. It's different, but it's really cool that these kids can do it and there's no arguments. They just play.
Good question.
Well, I've learned something today, guys. So this was worth doing tonight. So that is amazing. I would think that would end up at times in, you know, sort of an argument.
I mean, you start getting 5-5 tied in the third set, and I would think every call just gets a little bit more intense. It almost reminds me of the Gus Macker days of
call your own phone. Right. Wow, that's something. All right, let's go to golf. This is brought to us by Crown Hill Golf Club, 9500 U.S., Route 22 West in Williamsport. Their phone number is 740-986-4653. And as Shane alluded to earlier, they have all kinds of great banquet facilities in addition to a wonderful course up there. And so if you are looking to put on any kind of event where you might use banquet facilities, you might want to give them a call. And Shane, you want to give the information on our event that's coming up Saturday, I believe, up there?
Well, actually, we talked about the Lady Mustangs earlier. I wanted to go a week later. Kevin had sent me an email here. Crown Hill Open three-man scramble.
Okay.
This is on the 29th, so that would be a week from this Saturday, correct?
Okay. Yep.
9 a.m. Now, this is where you get a little bit more of the bigger cash involved in some of these bigger things that they're doing here. So, again, the prize is based on 18 teams. So this is probably a little bit more for some of our higher-level golfers. Get involved here. Check it out at crownhillgolfclub.com, or, again, give them a call, 740-986-4653. But, again, the three-man pot skins game. You're looking at some money up around $900 for first, $450 for second. Again, that's based on 18 teams getting in, but it's $20 per person with the optional $165 per team, and then the $20 per person on the optional skins game. So, again, for more details, check out their website there or the phone number that we always pass out, 740-986-4653. And, again, that's at Crown Hill Golf Club. Always appreciate guys, everything they do for us.
All right, John, let's talk a little golf.
Yeah, so Shane, the other night when I was searching Twitter, as you know, at Coconut Wall Papa, if you want to find great tweets, I saw that you had tweeted out about the individual leaderboard in golf, and that two Uniota players are at the top in a battle for the Player of the Year this season. Would you consider this a good thing in golf? And is there a situation where that could be a tough situation in another sport?
I think that's a fair point, John. I think in most sports, I think coaches would tell you that this is extremely difficult. You know, let's say, that you have a Coach Holland, looking here, or, you know, we talked about the Uniota offense earlier, or, you know, I know Coach Hoops in basketball, or I know my brother's kind of gone through this before down in Benton County. If in other sports where it's tough to see where the ball's going around, you know, let's look at, you know, a setter like a Goble compared to a hitter like a Boldy. You know, these are difficult situations, I think, to balance out in sports where there's statistics involved. In the individual sport like golf, I think the Schoblock Calvin race is kind of a healthy competition, isn't it? I mean, it's one of those things where it's their job and their duty almost to their team to grind out every round, no matter how good or how bad it's going. So at this situation, I see under the format that the league uses, Schoblock's currently up four. I know Calvin only dropping to 39, Schoblock a 40. That's a whole other debate. I'm not a big fan of those scores being dropped. I like the rule in place for a kid who gets sick or gets hurt. But I think if you play, it should count. That's just my personal opinion. So I'm not a big fan of the way they do it, but that's the rule in place. And I think right now, Schoblock at 36.75 and Calvin 37.75. But we have the JC round going, and then we're going to turn right back around and go to Cook's Creek. So this thing's going to be over before you know it. But yeah, I think that's interesting. I think that's healthy competition on the golf side, and I think pay attention down through the standings there. Right now, it's the Duncan kid of Paint Valley. He's the last guy in. But I look down through there. I see a Southeastern kid with Evans. I see Westfall well represented with about three kids. And I see Python. I see a lot of kids that are there, even if some of the teams that can't get the team score, I see some of the kids representing their schools. So very, very healthy competition, I think, when it comes to cross country. Mm-hmm. If we're going to give a shout out to them this week, I think that's also a healthy situation.
Yeah.
Where, you know, Marco and other teammates, they're pushing at the top. Because, you know, unlike these other sports guys, I guess if you're just individually, you're going out there, Marco's trying to run his best time. Schoblock or Calvin trying to card their best score, aren't they? I mean, it's a situation where, you know, a Maddie Schultz on the girls' side, you know, she might have individual goals in mind as a golfer in terms of medaling or winning sectional or district individual championships, but by her doing so, she's doing nothing but pushing herself to help the Lady Mustangs put their best team score on the board. So, I think that's an interesting question, guys, because I think in the individual sports, it is.
Yeah, and in golf, they're really in the same role, are they not? Whereas you mentioned, like, in basketball, you might have a point guard and a you know, somebody else, some other position, kind of battling it out for the player of the year. And it's hard to compare, like you mentioned. So it's
what happens, guys, the only thing I would say where over the years, now Uniota's in a league race, so they're grinding it out for a team score. The only thing I would say is sometimes I've seen kids be able to fall on this drop the lowest score thing where, you know, I don't think you would have this in terms of a team that's in a league race. But, you know, sometimes I think kids have to be careful not to use it as a crutch. Because, you know, it gets going bad and all of a sudden you're 8 over after 4 and you're like, okay, well, I'm just going to drop this score. And maybe you don't grind that round out. And, you know, I don't think that's where a Schoblock or Calvin come into play because of the team being in the league race. But I think some of these kids, let's say you play for a team that's fighting for fourth or fifth place, so to speak, or in a Piketon like the Endicott kid, you know, I think you still owe it to your team to grind it out, even though individually you may be dropping that score. You're trying to help Piketon, in that case, put the best score possible up there on the board.
Yep. Well, Shane, you mentioned cross country just a little bit ago, and when we were talking about that, the teammates battling for player of the year. But I know you have another cross country topic that you wanted to talk about a little bit.
Yeah, well, I think as always, we just need to highlight the kids. You can check out our scoreboard there on our cross country page. This past week, guys, they were over at Southeastern. Most of our locals were. I know Uniota boys and girls, they sweep that. So make sure you always check that out. You get your high school boys, your high school girls, as well as your junior high scores there. So I think that's the biggest thing there is I would want to highlight. I know Southeastern runs a great event over there. It's the Aaron Reed Memorial Invite, they call that. That's a pretty interesting course, one of our flat courses from you know, people familiar with the Southeastern Athletic Facility there. You can understand why they say that. That's kind of an on-site course, which is really, really neat. Not a lot of schools are able to put that right there on-site. I know that's becoming more and more popular because administration, they're not crazy about kids traveling to other facilities. So they're trying their best to figure out ways to put their cross country course on site. So that's probably the biggest thing there that we'll be looking at coming up on the SVC. But I did want to highlight that Southeastern invite, guys, before we quit for the week, because I think that's really, really important.
All right. And guys, we wanted to mention about contacts. Shane alluded to this a little bit earlier. If you have information that you'd like to give to one of our guys, if you disagree with them, or you have a topic you'd like to hear us talk about on SVC Sports Talk, you may get in touch with these two gentlemen and air your laundry. For Shane, you can email him at admin1@svcsportzone.com. And on Twitter, he is the handle @svcsportzone. And for, you know, information, if you're using hashtags to search for things, you can always look for #SVC Sports Talk. On Facebook, he maintains two profiles, Shane Combs, SVC Sports Zone, and SVCSportsZone.com. For Mr. Bruce, Mr. John Bruce, you can email him at jbruce1018@yahoo.com. And as he mentioned earlier, his Twitter handle is at Coconut Wallpapa. And you can search not only on his handle, but you can also use the hashtag SVC Sports Talk. And that will, his tweets germane to SVC will come up at that point. But he's a good follow just for fun, too. I want to say that. And we'd be remiss if we didn't mention our good friend Derek Webb and his SVC sports related tweets. Go out through Twitter at DWebWrites, at DWebWrites. And then he also maintains the verified account of DW1509 for his Buckeye news and information. And yes, he was in Dallas this past week, but we won't go there. He's living the good life, I think, right now.
Yeah.
Well, guys, that's a go Bucks, but I do want to say you guys are really training me well, because I was joking with John the other night at the game. You guys have me so well schooled now on the hashtag SVC Sports Talk that I was sending out a text the other night to someone, and I almost put it at the end of the text. I got myself just in time to erase it. So, yeah, you guys are going. But, guys, before we get out of here, on the cross-country related thing, I wanted to throw the cross-country out there separate, Bruce, and then I want to give you a chance to put the final thoughts on there, but I thought I would put this here at the end. And John, I wanted to get your take on this, and maybe John through SEO preps or maybe through Twitter we could throw it out, or maybe we could even throw this out to Eric Cox and see if Coxie could put it on the scoreboard show. I even thought about, you know, talking to David Weissong there at the Gazette, because this is something that really intrigues me, and anything we can open conversation up I think is a good thing. John, I'm going to ask you to put your coaching hat on for a second. Let's say you're a soccer coach, or let's say, you know, your soccer kid is kicking for the football team, or your soccer kid is running for the cross country team. Or if you want to be a baseball coach, and maybe your shortstop, who's a really good athlete, is going to go over and run some events for track. Let's talk playing two sports at one time. How do you balance that as a coach? And do you think it's a good idea for young kids to take that particular type of challenge on in the same season?
Well, I think one thing it would kind of behoove of everybody to sit down before the season and just talk out a plan between the coaches that are involved in the seasons for the student. Because if the coaches aren't on the same page, then it's going to be – it could be like pulling teeth trying to get things to go the right way, especially for the student. Also, I think I really like it, because I think, you know, you only have 4 years. Do what you can for the kid. And if you can help out multiple sports, that's great. You know, I played with someone the first year Unita had allowed two sports in the same season. We had, I believe, two people that did cross country and soccer, and then we had our halfback in football played soccer also. So, you know, it worked out for us. And I know we've had some kids that have done a lot of really good things using with cross country in our league in the last few years. And I think it's a good thing. My biggest concern for the kids is if they're spreading themselves too thin, because if you have, let's say you're doing cross country and soccer, you have a cross country meet on Wednesday, and then you have a soccer game Thursday night on the road, and you have two tests on Friday morning, how are you getting prepared for those tests? Because we have to remember these kids are students first. And that's my biggest concern with the multiple sports. And I just think that would be where you would talk with the other coaches and try to find the best strategy to help this kid have success throughout the athletic seasons and in the classroom.
Well, that's a good point, because some of the people that brought this up to me, Bruce, kind of challenged myself and challenged John a little bit because we were so passionate on the get kids involved in different things, you know what I mean, in the past. So on this situation, when we turn coach, do we feel differently? And I guess I follow John here. I want to give kids the opportunity to do so. I think where when you ask me to be come to put my coaching hat on, I do have to be fair to my program, and I do have to be fair to the accountability that I put out there with kids. And I think that John said it perfect. I think there has to be communication. So I think you have to make sure that it's one, it's schedule allows it to be logistically possible. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I like what John said about academics. I also think there has to be we have to look out for the kids' safety in terms of sometimes with cross country and football and the wear and tear on body and things like that. But no, I think we see it with the Robinson kid there at Uniota and Fetters with kickers and football players. And then I think we see it. I know Cameron Reed out of Paint Valley. I know he's playing a little golf, playing a little football. It's trying to balance that a little bit, but it's tough. But I think, if it's doable, the more we can get kids involved, I think it's a good idea. We have small schools, but I do. I think it has to be a communication thing, and I think parents have to be in the middle of it and what we think's right for kids. And so I wanted to throw that in at the end of the show here, guys, to see if we couldn't generate some talk. Maybe we could use Twitter as a platform, John, maybe SEO Preps, to maybe go outside the SVC area to get more and more people involved. So I think that's a great comment to put at the end of the show, just to see if we can't stir that discussion. So, anything we want to add to that before we get out of here this week? I just thought that's really interesting. I thought there'd be a lot of people that have an opinion on that.
Maybe they will, and they can rewind and get your contact information and get right to us, can't they?
Yeah. So, guys, we'll look forward to maybe extending that conversation on the social media and in the next week's show. So until that next time, for Triple Crown Family Fun Center and all the other sponsors on the website, for Bruce Knox and all the people behind the scenes and at DBK Media Services, and for John Bruce, this is Shane Combs reminding you, keep visiting SVCSportsZone.com, where we're 100% SVC 100% of the time.
You've been listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Family Fun Center. Join us next time for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. And visit SVCSportsZone.com, where we're 100% SVC 100% of the time.